alternative. Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
And good afternoon. This is the Devil's Advocate Radio Show. So delighted to have you join us. My name is Jim Santel. I'm not Mike Crute. Mike and Dom are out there in the world doing important business on behalf of this important radio station. But I'm delighted to be with you this afternoon. I'm joined in the Madison studio by Evan, who is our producer this afternoon.
Brian is real. He exists.
Brian is real. He exists out there, and he is also doing some important work, as is Evan, as is all the staff.
It's true, too. They're really putting it in.
And today we're glad to have all of you joining us. We're going to be taking phone calls, as we always do, throughout the next couple of hours. That number is 844-967-2789. Here on the Devil's Advocates Radio Show again, my name is Jim Santel. Honored, pleased, delighted to be stepping in, standing in, sitting in for Mike and Dom and others as we continue with our discussion of important events in Wisconsin, in the United States, and in the world. This afternoon, we're going to spend virtually all of our time talking about the last couple of hours, actually about 2.5 hours altogether, Evan. Things coming out of the January 6th committee in Washington, D.C., chaired by Benny Thompson, vice-chaired by Liz Cheney. We're going to spend most of our afternoon chatting about that, again, taking your calls, your comments. I'll review a lot of that with you, talk about my own perspectives on things related to the testimony we heard today, the presentations made by members of that committee, the impact not only today, but down the road for the committee report that's probably going to be coming out in the fall of this year. So again, interested in your comments, your observations, your questions at 844-967-2789 throughout the next couple of hours. My name is Jim Santel. Before we start that very good and engaging conversation about the J6 committee this afternoon, which you heard on this very radio station, I'm certain you can pick it up, Evan, down the road as well. If you did, in fact, miss much, if not all, of the presentation this afternoon. Will certainly be a part of our future discussions as well. I want to back into the discussion, however, this afternoon by talking about a witness who was not there, who was not, in fact, present during the course of the testimony today. And his name is Steve Bannon. We know his name well from past history in America, a sometimes senior advisor to former President Trump, significantly during periods of time that are not relevant to the particular focus of the January 6th panel. Steve Bannon was not an employee of the United States government, was not on the official payroll, but nonetheless played this role in advising the former president on various things. And during the course of that time, plainly had lots of conversations with the president, perhaps others involved in January 6th, both before and after that event happened. And because of that, he attracted the attention of Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney and all the members of the J6 committee. And they issued, as you well know, a subpoena for his testimony to come and appear today, previously, at any time previous to today, to talk about what he knew, the things he saw in the White House before, during, and after January 6th. You all recall well what happened here. Steve Bannon decided that he was not going to cooperate with the January 6th committee, so he was among the very first people who said just that. I'm not going to cooperate. I'm not going to come down to Capitol Hill, and I'm not going to submit to questions that you may ask me. And as a result of that, after lots of back and forth with his lawyers, the lawyers for the committee ultimately made a referral to the United States Department of Justice about 6, 7, 8, 9 blocks down Pennsylvania Avenue to Merrick Garland, and asked Merrick Garland to criminally charge Steve Bannon for the offense of contempt of Congress, failure to appear, failure to abide by this subpoena issued to him. It took a bit. It took a while, not inappropriately. The assistant U.S. attorneys, the folks at Maine Justice, those prosecutors, spent their time looking through all this and made the decision in the end that indeed Steve Bannon should be charged by a federal grand jury. So they presented evidence of his failure to appear, of his contempt of Congress to a grand jury there right in the District of Columbia. And many months ago, the District of Columbia grand jury, sure enough, returned a two-count indictment against Steve Bannon, a two-count indictment alleging his contemptuous behavior and charging him with offense conduct, each one of which carries with it a penalty of up to a year in jail and a $100,000 fine. May not sound like a huge penalty, but both misdemeanor charges, but nonetheless significant because they are one of the first times in recent history when the U.S. Department of Justice has prosecuted someone based upon a referral from a, in this case, House committee, could also be a Senate committee, another entity of the United States Congress, for failing to abide by the simple subpoenas that it's issued. And as we have talked before many times in this show, Mike, Dom, others, and the Saturday show, certainly during the course of the week, we have talked about what that means. When you are issued a subpoena in America, what that means is at a minimum, you need to show up. That includes if you're a witness for a proceeding, you need to show up for that court proceeding, that administrative proceeding. If you are being summoned in to serve as a prospective juror, at a minimum, you need to respond in some way. You can perhaps contact the clerk of court, but you need to show up. And that is the baseline issue. That's the baseline obligation that anyone who has issued a subpoena has to comply with. Steve Bannon didn't do that. He said instead, I'm not showing up. I'm not going to cooperate. And again, based upon that history, the attorneys, the prosecutors at the United States Department of Justice returned this two-count indictment, charging him with these misdemeanor violations. And Steve Bannon has, of course, since that time, maintained he is innocent. And during the course of the last 6-8 months or so, while this has been pending, he has said that his consistent defense has been the former President Donald Trump provided him with a shield to his obligation to come and appear and testify before the J6 committee. He said, I am shielded by executive privilege, which the former president can assert. And for that reason, because of that, my conversations with him during this time when I was serving in this sort of ex officio, but nonetheless senior advisory capacity with the president, they are shielded from discovery, shielded from disclosure to the January 6th committee. For that reason, I am not showing up. And that's my defense, principally, maybe some of the things around the edges, but principally that has been his defense. The trial of those two counts is scheduled to begin and will begin in just a few days, actually about 6 days, on Monday, July 18th. Yes, that's next Monday. A federal district court judge in the District of Columbia is bringing that lawsuit, finally, that criminal prosecution, to fruition, if you will, picking a jury, picking the process to go forward on those misdemeanor counts. Steve Bannon up to now has said that he's going to turn that criminal case against him. These words, not mine, into the misdemeanor for hell, his words, for the Justice Department. All of that changed. All of that changed just a couple of days ago when a couple of things happened. One is that the former president said, presumably in contact with Steve Bannon's attorneys, said, you know what? I'm going to release him from this executive privilege shield. I'm going to tell him, go ahead and testify, no harm done. And of course, Steve Bannon's lawyers then wrote to the panel, told members of the panel that their client would now be pleased and delighted to appear before the panel to talk about things. Zoe Lofgren, a Democrat from California, said we got the letter around midnight a couple of days ago from his lawyer saying that he would testify, and we want to have him testify. So the committee, of course, has not yet had a chance to discuss it, but I expect we'll be hearing from him, and there are many questions we have for him. The question, of course, that you may pose, you may think about right now is, that change in position, that change in posture, does it impact the trial? And the answer, as we know from the judge just about 24 hours or so ago, is no, it does not. It does not change the posture of that trial. The judge has said in what's called a pre-trial conference with the attorneys for the prosecution, the attorneys for the defense, The judge has come out and said, you know what? We're going ahead with this trial. The fact that you have decided now, basically, to drop this executive privilege shield, which, as an important aside, never really shielded him at all. Again, as we know, the executive privilege runs to the present executive, the present president, not a former president. Also, almost certainly not protected by discussions that maybe Steve Bannon had the presence of other people. Certainly not protected because they may have been chatting about the very things that the January 6th committee is talking about. That is criminal conduct. Criminal conduct is not shielded by any privilege, any privilege. If you're talking to someone about committing a crime, that doesn't hold. And so the judge a couple of days ago said, you know what? All of those defenses, I'm not going to instruct the jury on them. You can raise what you will, but I'm going to stop you from alleging those kinds of things during the course of the trial, which is starting on Monday, by the way, the judge says. And I'm not buying any of this belated notion that now you're going to run to Congress and testify before Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney and other members of the committee. Not buying that at all. The jury's still going to be selected. The trial's still going ahead on those two counts. All of that, because it's a nice lead-in to our principal discussion today. Again, Steve Bannon, maybe this is the sideshow to what happened today, but an important issue, an important development, an event in American history, when Steve Bannon, again, just this past week, is told by the judge, number one, he cannot raise these privilege defenses, probably going to be shut down in a major way, prompting his attorney publicly to say, gosh, I don't have much to work with here. Maybe I will, in fact, have to reconsider what we're doing here. And here's the first prediction before we begin to head into the first break of the day and before we begin our major discussion this afternoon of the January 6th committee proceedings. What's going to happen on Monday? Well, we know that Steve Bannon's not going to be testifying before Monday before the committee. Liz Cheney has indicated that there may not be another hearing this week, but some point down the road, and certainly there will be some interest in having him, whether it's before the committee, publicly or privately, interested in his commentary. But the reality is he's not going to do that before Monday. The trial's going to go ahead. Does that make any difference that he comes forward and says, you know what? I would like to testify now before the Zoe Lofgrens of the world and the Benny Thompsons. And the answer is no, as a pure legal matter. This is not the case. We can get around it because you've already committed the crime, if you will, right, of failing to appear, which gets us back to our very, very first comments. The crime is the failure to appear, and that's what Steve Bannon's going to be tried for in the federal district court on Monday of the coming week. Join us at 844-967-2789. We're going to be talking this afternoon about the January 6th committee, the events of just this afternoon.
A special place in hell for Republicans who should know better.
...60% of the time, they're right every time. The devil's advocate.
And good afternoon. We're back. This is the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Good afternoon, America. My name is Jim Santel. As I said before the break, I'm sitting in, standing in for Mike Kruth this afternoon, who is out doing the business of this radio station to keep it on the air, to keep it alive, keep it active, keep it engaged with you on the important issues of our time. I'm delighted to be here, joined in the studio as my producer is Evan. And we're taking your calls this afternoon at 844-967-2789. That number once again, 844-967-2789. I promised at the start of the show, at the top of the hour, we're spending most of our time this afternoon, virtually all of our time, talking about what happened for the previous couple of hours in the House J6 Committee, reviewing once again the events of January 6th, the things leading up to it, the events of that day. We heard a lot about that today. And then also the events that followed it, but providing context for all Americans to understand what happened on that day that changed forever America. We know that in advance of today's hearing, one of the principal presenters, one of the principal committee members who is responsible for offering up some of the testimony today, her name is Stephanie Murphy. She is a representative from the state of Florida. And she told us in advance of the hearing today what we could expect. She said, we will lay out the body of evidence that we have that talks about how the presidents, and she's talking there about President Donald Trump, tweet in the wee hours of December 19th, we'll get back to that also, of be there, be wild, that's in quotes because that's what the tweet said, was a siren call, Representative Murphy said, to these folks coming to Washington, D.C. She referred to this tweet that specifically said, big protest in D.C. on January 6th, the president wrote, be there, will be wild, as I just said. And Stephanie Murphy, the representative, member of the J6 committee from Florida, went on to say, we're going to connect the dots during these hearings between these groups. She's talking specifically about groups like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and others. Between these groups and those who are trying in government circles to overturn the election. This is Stephanie Murphy telling us in advance what the agenda was for today. I think you have to reach your own conclusions, she went on to say. But based on the events leading up to the day, January 6th, I think that would be a logical conclusion. There are, in fact, these ties between those officials, those people who we expected more of in terms of supporting and continuing the government of our nation, and those people who were designing and planning and did, in fact, attempt to overthrow our government, like the Oath Keepers and a fellow named Stuart Rhodes and the Proud Boys and a fellow named Enrique Torrio, who all of whom, both of whom, and their companions have been indicted by the United States Department of Justice for seditious conspiracy, using force to overthrow the government. So the connections between those groups and others and people in positions of responsibility, of authority at the White House and other places in Washington, D.C. before, during, and after January 6th. That was going to be the focus of the J6 committee hearings today. And in fact, it was. Let's begin with some of the review of that included not only Stephanie Murphy's presentation, but also hearing once again from Jamie Raskin. Jamie Raskin, who's a U.S. representative from Maryland. We may remember him well. Jamie Raskin was one of the principal presenters for the impeachment proceedings that happened in the wake of January 6th. He was the House presenter, the House litigator, if you will. Also a major player in today's presentation. It started, however, with some very compelling words from the chairman of the committee, Benny Thompson. You know what he said? He said, we settle our differences at the ballot box. He started at the very start of the committee hearing today. He said, you know, there are many times when we're on the losing sides of things, and we may protest, we may organize, we may plan for the next election. But the thing we don't do, Benny Thompson said, is we don't turn violent. We don't use force and harassment and intimidate people. Plainly, a direction headed in Donald Trump's sight, if you will, alleging that he did all of that and responded inappropriately, inconsistent with history. Benny Thompson saying, we settle our differences in the ballot box. We don't do what the president and other people encourage people to do on, before, and frankly, after January 6th as well. And so he talked about this last-ditch effort that the president had to try to maintain his power, try to maintain his position in the White House that plainly failed. Nonetheless, he summoned a mob, and that was the principal focus of today's hearing, the connection between what the president and others did to get that mob here and to bring them to Washington, D.C., to attempt to overthrow the government, and certainly to attempt to stop the counting of electoral votes on that day. He was followed by the vice chair of the committee, Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney, representative from Wyoming, as you well know, who talked again. And always drops these very interesting tidbits, if you will. And she did again today, both before and at the very end of the hearing. There's one at the very end that we'll also get to, anticipating the next hearing as well. But at this very start, she said, you know, for a long period of time, as we looked at this period from about December 14th, which is a seminal date today, and January 6th, everyone was talking, it was close to Trump, about how the election had not been stolen. And there was this notion that, you know, our defense to our involvement was going to be, we said those kinds of things. Now, she said at the very outset that instead we're hearing recently that the president was misled, that was persuaded by others, blaming people like John Eastman, who was the author of this memorandum, this design to overthrow the process. Sidney Powell, whose name we'll also hear a lot about this afternoon as well, that he was persuaded, perhaps even duped by these other people. And she gave us this insight into where the committee is going today in understanding all the things we're hearing, this change, if you will, in defense from the election not being stolen or being stolen, depending upon which side of the fence you're on. But now that the president's defense is going to be, you know what, I may have been misled by others. That's what Liz Cheney said at the start of the hearing. And we're going to chat more about the substance of that. She's going to talk, as she did, we're going to talk more about what the vice chair, or the people the vice chair called the crazies, and the blame she placed upon them. As we come back here on the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, 844-967-2789.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
And this is Jim Santel once again today in the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm here in the studio, and Evan is here too, acting as my producer today. We're talking for the remainder of our time together today all about the J6 committee, the results of that 2.5-hour proceeding, going through some of the significant issues that came up, some significant testimony, especially from a couple of witnesses. Their names, Jason Tatenhoff and Stephen Ayers, at the very end of the presentation. Before we even get to that, however, a very compelling story told by the committee managers, specifically Representative Jamie Raskin from Maryland, Stephanie Murphy from Florida, telling the story about what happened on December 18th. Again, filling in some of the information about what was going on post-election, but before the inauguration, plainly, in January of 2021. But also before the January 6th insurrection. What did they tell us? Well, they said on December 18th, there was what could only be described, according to everybody who was there, all of the representatives who were discussing this, who were describing the events of that day, an unhinged meeting, their word, not mine, an unhinged meeting on December 18th. At the time of that meeting, late in the evening, we have entering into the White House three people. Michael Flynn, who we know well from previous engagements with not only the Justice Department, previously convicted, had his conviction overturned for lying to the FBI. Sidney Powell, also this attorney well known to America, perhaps not in a especially good way for advancing in all these pieces of litigation around the country, this notion that the election had been stolen, and also named Patrick Byrne, who is from Overstock, probably the unknown character here. They somehow make it into the White House late in the evening of December 18th, after the election, before January 6th, and they're having this meeting with the President of the United States of America alone in the Oval Office. And during
we have sound of that interaction with Mr. Cipollone.
It sounded like Pat Cipollone was not especially pleased, right, Evan, to hear about this. One of the representative said apparently he comes running when he discovers that suddenly the president with these three, again, none of them White House staffers, none of them certainly checked, screened by White House authorities. They're somehow permitted in. How that happens, for those of us who've been there, I suspect many of you had, very, very difficult to get in, absent an awful lot of hurdles to hurdle. They get in and they're having this conversation about what they can do to keep Donald Trump in the presidency, as Evan Sullivan just said, the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone. Cipollone comes in, he storms in and says, what's going on here? Looks at one of them, says, looks at Patrick Berman and says, who are you? I don't even know who you are. And says, what's going on here? And according to all the witnesses this afternoon, all the testimony, both on tape and then through the hearsay testimony, the recounting of especially Representatives Murphy and Raskin, there is screaming that's going on. The screaming continues for a long period of time. This meeting apparently migrates into the Roosevelt Room right across the way, migrates eventually into the residence, which is down the portico, up into the main building of the White House. When we think about the White House itself, out of the West Wing, and the conversation heated and profane, almost reaching the point of a physical fight among people, ended up in the residence, as I said, and it's all about what we can do. What can be done to keep the president in office? That is the advocacy, plainly, by Michael Flynn, Sidney Powell, perhaps this Patrick Brimmer fellow as well. And, of course, Pat Cipollone, who's always said, continues to say, as he told the committee last week, there's no there. There's no basis upon which to keep him in office. The election was not stolen. And stop it. Stop it. Apparently, name-calling is going on December 18th as this just over-the-top raucous event takes place. During the course of it, apparently Sidney Powell, as she has said before, talks about the engagement of Venezuela and Iran and even China. Insults are thrown back and forth. At some point, Pat Cipollone says, you know, how can it be that 60 judges have all found that there's no there, that this election was not in fact thrown? And Sidney Powell apparently says, well, they're all corrupt. Every single one of them is corrupt. We need to talk to the president. And the president plainly, implicitly, and not explicitly encourages this because he is listening finally to people who are telling him what he wants to hear. Not what he should hear, but what he wants to hear. He's telling them, they are telling him, selling to him a package of goods that are plainly is premised upon facts that are not real. Screaming in and out of the West Wing, in and out of the residence. Nuts is how it's described. Along the way, it also becomes clear that even in advance of this meeting on the evening of December 18th, there's an executive order that's put together by some folks who met at the Trump International Hotel a couple days earlier. And the concept behind this executive order, a draft, thankfully never sees the light of day, never sees a light coming through some authors, probably like Sidney Powell, Michael Flynn, others, that the Department of Defense should seize voting machines and appoint Sidney Powell, who is there in the West Wing and the Oval Office, some sort of special counsel to monitor all of this. Again, Pat Cipollone, in his own testimony, as we heard today, shaking his head, scratching his head. That's probably understating it wildly, indicating that there's no there. This is all craziness. The executive order, of course, is not issued, but it further underscores what the intent was at that time to try to convince the president to go ahead and continue to push to retain power, to overturn the results of the election of the previous month in December. And we get this absolutely meltdown situation, one of the most dramatic, probably, in all of American history on December 18th. Eventually, Pat Cipollone is so outraged by all of this that he actually escorts Michael Flynn out of the West Wing, out of the White House, off into the grounds, presumably right there on Pennsylvania Avenue and 16th and 17th Streets, he says, to make certain that Michael Flynn doesn't somehow make his way back into the residence. And this, once again, Pat Cipollone indicating all of this, recounting this to confirm all of this on December 18th. A very important thing that the committee talked about today, presented an awful lot of evidence, not just from Pat Cipollone and others, but confirming that this event in which the president is still hanging on to this notion of retaining the presidency in mid-December, December 18th, December 19th, and then, perhaps the most important thing that comes out of that is the president plainly stewing. This meeting then has taken place. Presumably the shouting has stopped. The screaming has stopped. The nutso has stopped. And at 1:42 in the morning, we know the former president did lots of things in the early morning hours. He sends this tweet that Representative Murphy talked about in advance of the hearing today. And he says to all of those who would support him, be there, meeting on January 6th will be wild. be there. We'll be wild. That is the invitation that he makes at 1:42 a.m. on December 19th. And that's what initiates everything that happened then afterwards, bringing us up to January 6th, the insurrection, the riot, the loss of life, the injury not only to individuals, that is the most horrific consequence of that day, but also the injury to our nation and the attempt to overthrow the legitimate decisions made by Americans in voting for one president, one candidate, and not for another. I'm going to talk more about that this afternoon, but we're always taking your phone calls. Delighted to have you call in at 844-967-2789. And Evan's got lined up. Kurt, you're calling in. Be delighted to have you contribute to our conversation this afternoon.
Yes, James, good afternoon. I'd like to make a comment and ask you a question.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
I've been watching every last minute of all the proceedings, and I've also, you know, news commentators, and my blood literally curdles when I hear someone make the statement about how smart Trump is and how he was able to manipulate so many people. I couldn't disagree more. He is clearly dumb as a box of rocks. And this is a man who has made others wealthy because they used him as a willing pawn. And if anything, he's a benchmark to two things. One, how badly broken our justice system, because this guy should have been in jail before he hit the age of 50. And two, it also shows what happens to a large number of people in the United States who lack all skills of critical thinking or are already fascists, and it just brought them out of the shadows. So my question to you is this. After today, and especially with the closing, with the next hearing saying that they have audio of Trump interfering with a witness,
yes.
If the proceedings were not to move forward from this point on, not hearing anything more, in your opinion, do they have enough to put him away?
Kurt, let me unpack some of those very, very good thoughts. Thanks so much for calling in. Really appreciated that. And, you know, I could not agree more that many of the things that we have been challenged with throughout since 2015, arguably before that, right, when the former president first declared his candidacy for the White House. This is a man who fundamentally doesn't understand how government works, right? And he reveals that during the course of his tweets, his comments, both official and unofficial, the things that he says on the record, off the record. He does not have not only those critical thinking skills, Kurt, that you just described, but he fundamentally doesn't understand how it is that the Congress works, how the executive branch works, what judges do. And my suspicion, like that of many others, it was implicit, if you will, in what a lot of what Liz Cheney said today and in previous proceedings, is that this is a man who came to the White House anticipating that he'd be able to operate the government, be the chief executive, one branch among three, which he may or may not appreciate fully, operate it in the same way that he ran the Trump organization itself. And that is, I simply tell somebody to do something. I simply tell Evan that I want you to do this, and he will do it because he is my employee. Evan, you're not my employee. You're my colleague and my friend, and glad to have you with me. But that the notion still holds.
Yeah.
In government, as in here, as in most businesses, the notion that you can simply tell people what to do is certainly true in civics, in government generally. You just don't do that. And here, I think, we have a situation where Donald Trump found himself consistently stupefied. Maybe, Kurt, he is a product of a failed education and may be as dumb as a box of rocks as you appropriately described it. But he also ran for the presidency. And we should expect more, right? And I think, Kurt, you'd agree with that as well. It certainly is a benchmark that we have not yet, in all of the fraud that he has committed, seen him in a court where he is really held criminally responsible for the things he's done civilly in many ways. And we certainly hope that the U.S. Department of Justice, which we know now is looking at many of these same kinds of things, will in fact pursue this. And so let me offer a couple of more insights into the very good questions, Kurt, that you raised about what happens next. We know that for all of this presentation, including the things that we heard about today, some of them for the first time, this December 18th meltdown discussion that was going on, we know that the committee itself cannot prosecute him. I started this afternoon by talking about Steve Bannon. The committee does not have the capacity to prosecute anybody. They're not litigants. They're not the Department of Justice. They can refer things or not. But the Department of Justice on its own can, and I would offer should be, investigating many of these kinds of things. Every indication now in the wake of everything from Peter Navarro indicating that he got a subpoena. We know from Lisa Monaco they are definitely looking at this false electors situation. The Attorney General himself, Merrick Garland, has said on at least two, if not three occasions, we're going to pursue this as far as it needs to go. Very, very strong indications. We've had some search warrants issued, right? Jeffrey Clark and others out there and John Eastman. We know search warrants come out of the Department of Justice. We know that they're looking at it. We don't know the scope. We don't know the focus yet, nor should we. All these things are grand jury proceedings and should not be in the public domain. But we know that the Department of Justice is looking at this, and we do need to spend some time waiting for that result. But we also know the reason for the committee's work today is to let the American public know what happened. That is a huge, huge responsibility and duty. They're doing a fantastic job from my perspective. I'm going to talk more about that right after the break here on the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Again, taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789.
Gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top and they have to get solved from the top, and the president's the leader and he's got to get everybody in a room and he's got to lead, and he doesn't do that. He doesn't like doing that. That's not his strength.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
And we are in the last segment of the Devil's Advocates for this hour on this wonderful Tuesday afternoon. Thanks so much for listening in. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in this afternoon for Mike and Dom. I'm here with Evan. We're talking this afternoon about the J6 committee, this very significant hearing that just took place a number of hours ago, also broadcast right here on this radio station for you to listen to consume, and to talk about. Right before the break, we're chatting in particular about this calamitous event that happened on December 18th before January 6th in the White House late at night, screaming, yelling. A young man named Derek Lyons talking about screaming was completely out there. He said this was completely nuts throughout the night, and as did Cassidy Hutchinson last week, this stellar witness describing a lot of the events right before, during, and after January 6th. She also described it as an unhinged meeting, and it was in the wake of that, as we were saying before the break, that the president sent this invitation to America, if you will, at least a certain portion of America, inviting them to Washington, D.C., saying, be there. Be there on January 6th. Will be wild. One of the organizers described that as sort of an invitation to the Red Wedding, a reference, I think this is the reference, right, Evan, to the Game of Thrones and this very calamitous, horrific, bloody event, right?
Yeah, it's a sinister, kind of creepy reference. I mean, you know, people, like, lots of people died.
Lots of people died. And, again, the fact that one of the people who was in the receiving end of that tweet viewed this in retrospect, even at the time, as kind of an invitation to that kind of calamitous thing, it underscores the seriousness of this. It's not just someone who is tweeting some mindless thing. He is the president of the United States of America, sending this invitation, again, principally to people like the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers. We recall well that during the course of the campaign, during one of those debates, he looked at them and said, stand back and stand by. Stand back and stand by. We didn't all know.
I saw that live.
Did you see that live, Evan? Right? Right?
It shook me to the core. I mean, what he was refusing to do in that moment, you know, very, very stark.
Given the opportunity, Evan, as you just said, to say, you know what, I'm going to distance myself because I am a continuing candidate for the presidency of the United States of America, and I'm going to reject everything that these insurrectionist groups, these white supremacist military groups like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, I'm going to put them to one side. I'm going to dismiss them. I'm going to reject everything that they're about, and instead says, no, stand back and stand by, and repeats that effectively.
They even gave him the words. They said, would you please ask them to stand down, right? They made it easy for him.
Made it easy, gave him the words, which he may not have understood, but he understood enough that that was the message. And he understood certainly when he says, be there, will be wild. He understands very much what that invitation was all about. And in fact, it was wild. People lost their lives on January 6th. Huge numbers of people injured at that time. And we did come very close, as this committee is showing us on a regular basis, to losing our democracy on that day. And we are still challenged by all of these kinds of things, these challenges to our republic, and this continuing notion here in Wisconsin and around the country that the election was a fraud, that it was stolen. And that's what animates much of what the committee was talking about this afternoon. We're going to talk more about that in our remaining moments in this segment. We're also going to take your calls. And Mark, you're on the line. You've been waiting for a while. Thanks so much for calling in. Your question or your comment, Mark, for our conversation about the J6 committee.
A couple of comments first. The Hamilton 85, he closes out, the Federalist Papers, I know powerful individuals in this and other states are enemies to a general national government in every possible shape. And a 75 warning about avaricious people, that using the state for their own purposes, their own position for their own purposes, enrich themselves. And for these congressmen that I saw, 11 of them went to a meeting to talk about overthrowing the election. That the warning to all these people that they took an oath to the Constitution. The Constitution as it exists today, not the Constitution that they think it should be or the Constitution they dream up of writing if they want to have a new constitutional convention. The Constitution as it exists today. For those members of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers that were members of the military, that they took an oath to the Constitution of the United States, as I believe most, I think, lawyers take as well, to uphold the Constitution, to obey it, to uphold the law. And how these people, that the rule of law requires them to be held accountable, each and every one of them.
Absolutely.
To the fullest extent of the law.
Right.
I mean, the committee needs to refer this to the Department of Justice, and the Department of Justice needs to say, no, we're not going to overlook this. We're not going to give you a slap on the wrist. You're going to get slapped silly and go to jail if necessary, or drummed out of Congress if necessary.
And Mark, your invocation of Hamilton's 85, and that's exactly it, right? A lot of people have quoted from that, this notion that avaricious people, and certainly seemingly describing Donald Trump, not having the best interests of the nation at heart, very much relevant. The specific meeting you're talking about, as we learned again today in sort of the second portion of the J6 hearings today, a December 21st meeting in which this so-called Eastman theory was presented from John Eastman. He wrote this memorandum describing this multi-purpose way of overcoming the results of the November election that involved the vice president, involved these electors.
Do you remember the photographs?
Yes.
That came out that day, right? So, the MyPillow guy, right. Eastman, being pictured outside the Oval Office, right?
Absolutely.
And you got to write in big letters.
Right.
For president, former President Trump, you need to write big.
Right.
And
right.
Literally from a football field away,
right.
Reporters took pictures
of
you could read this stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Amazing.
It is amazing. And once again, it underscores, again, the lack of sophistication. But more importantly, I think to Mark's good point here, the evil intent here. There is a powerful, there is a sinister intent here that was meant to overthrow the government. And the fact, as Mark was just indicating, that we had representatives, again, invited to the White House to hear, these members of Congress to hear Eastman talk about the ways in which indeed, there is a theory. There is a theory upon which you can overthrow this election. Pat Cipollone, again, once seemingly, if not a hero in American history, certainly now disclosing once again his attempts to push back on this consistently, telling this group the vice president does not have that authority. That is not the case. He doesn't do anything much more than a ministerial act on January 6th, Pat Cipollone, in all these situations, all these meetings, private and quasi-public with members of the Congress, consistently saying, no, 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 you cannot do this. You need to drop this crazy theory, this nutso theory, as some members of the committee have indicated. Witnesses have likewise described this inside the White House, the same kind of thing. Pat Cipollone is the one who's there, presumably, and we know with others as well, telling the president, that there is, in fact, no basis upon which to pursue all of this. We're going to continue with this discussion this afternoon in our second hour, inviting, as always, your calls here to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I'm Jim Santel, joined in the studio by Evan. We're taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789, talking about today's proceedings before the J6 Committee. Join us after the break. Offer your observations as we continue to talk about America today and in the future.
Get a great effing criminal defense lawyer. You're going to need it.